Welcome to House of Comments. We thought we'd have a really simple week. We'll talk about the local elections. It'll all be nice. But hello, Emma Bunnell. That's not what's happened, has it?
No, Charlotte Henry, that is not what's happened because Scotland has exploded.
Exploded, imploded. Pick your adjective as you see fit. The Scottish government is on the brink of collapse after a deal with the Greens and the SNP has fallen through over basically the SNP's shift on climate change policy, and the Greens have walked away from the government. It means the SNP are
Well, no,
now...
the Greens were thrown out of the government, but it was all that sort of I'm going to dump you before you dump me kind of thing.
Yeah, it had that very much. Yes, no. My ex goes to a different school now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what's happened. So it means Humza Yousaf is leading a minority SNP administration, and I can see absolutely zero problems with that. I'm sure it will all be smooth and be absolutely fine.
As I just said on Twitter, Humza Yousaf has played a bad hand appallingly. He just has, like, he has like the opposite of political instinct. If there's a thing he shouldn't do, he runs towards it.
We've said similar about Rishi Sunak, but yes, he's...
I think to be fair to Rishi Sunak, not...
Whoa, I'm clipping that.
Often, he is not as bad as Humza Yousaf.
Okay. What is your particular criticism of how this has played out then?
Well, for a start, he should have seen it coming. He should have laid the ground when they decided to drop these measures much, much better with their coalition partners. Now, the Greens have been nightmare coalition partners for the SNP.
The Greens are being a nightmare. That doesn't sound like
know,
them.
Imagine. I mean, one of the things that's really become clear from Brighton to Scotland is when the Greens get their hands on the levers of administration, they are useless at it.
Can I just say, and I don't like to be too personal on the show, as you know, I'm a deeply civilised and polite human being who never loses their temper. I wish you could all see Emma's face when I said that. When I was campaigning as a candidate, the most unpleasant people I ever had to deal with were the Greens.
Well, it's fascinating because online, I made some mild criticism of the Greens the other day and got 2 days of shit for it. And there are two groups, and I said at the time, I said that they are worse than the Cybernats. And the Cybernats were traditionally the absolute worst online. Now, there are other debates where, as you know, I've got myself involved and they are even worse. But the Cybernats were traditionally absolutely fierce and ferocious and unending shit, just going on and on and on and on. And the Greens are as bad these days. And I think in many ways, this goes back to the decision they made in 2015 to not be a single issue party anymore.
Mm.
Which means that instead of being relentlessly focused
on the environment,
on climate change and the environment, they picked up a whole bunch of fringe issues and ran with them, and they became the home of the kinds of people who are obsessed with fringe issues. And people who are obsessed with fringe issues tend to be fringe. Not just blue fringe, but fringe.
Yes. They sort of tried to position themselves to the left of Labour. There's also, and it always takes me a moment to get my head around this, but it's pertinent to this story, which is their policies in Scotland are different to the policies in the UK, right?
Yeah, but that's not wholly unusual because that's how devolution should work.
So by which I mean, for example, the Scottish Greens are in favour of independence, correct?
Yes.
Whereas, you know, Caroline Lucas, you know, and there was a bit of a friction, wasn't there, during the EU referendum? If I recall.
You'd have to remind me.
I'd have to remind. But anyway, the point we're making, and you've expressed it very well, is that they're no longer just the climate change party.
No, and I think it's a real shame because actually they could have had real musculature if they'd stuck to that one issue and really driven any government, any council, anywhere where they were in the legislature on that issue, but instead they completely dissolved all of their campaigning muscle. They became obsessed with things like gender ID, self-ID, and really kind of damaged themselves in terms of the kinds of people the Greens could reach. So, for example, my mum would have been well open to voting Green. I mean, she's a Labour Party member, but she's the sort of person. But she just, you know, she just looks at them now and thinks they're a joke party.
Yeah. Just to be clear, I was totally and utterly wrong about the Greens and Brexit. The Scottish Greens believe that Brexit, completely opposed Brexit, and particularly because Scotland voted against it. So ignore everything I said before that. But you make a very good point. And I just want to go back to the thing we said, you said earlier about Hamza Yousif kind of not seeing this coming. Of all the things that would trigger the Greens to walk out in a huff and to sort of martyr themselves and to make a point, mucking around on environmental policy was obviously going to be the thing.
The problem was, in one day, you had the announcement that the Scottish NHS was going to follow the CAS report and the reduction of the climate change targets. And those have been two of the Greens' biggest kind of issues in government, in the Scottish government.
Just quickly remind people what the CAS report is.
The CAS report was a massive four-year report into the gender services and the evidence-based medicine behind transitioning children in terms of gender.
Yeah, and it came out a couple of weeks ago, and both the UK government and the Scottish government have now accepted it.
Have accepted its recommendations in full. It's been controversial. It shouldn't have been. It's, you know, it's fully evidence-based. There's been quite a lot of misinformation. A Labour MP, Dawn Butler, had to actually apologise to the Houses of Parliament because she had repeated misinformation that had been given to her in a briefing by Stonewall, and then had to come and correct the record.
Yeah, so those were the two things that the Greens were on edge about. So he has played this badly. Hamza Yousif has said, the SNP needs the freedom and flexibility to ensure we move Scotland forward. We need to speak to the country with one voice, our voice. It just, to sum up, we've got a lot to get through, so I want to bring an end to this, but it just seems to me that the SNP have just been so knocked off their perch recently. We discussed, didn't we, all the stuff around the allegations that towards Nicola Sturgeon's husband and his charge and rearrest. It's, you know, it has been a mess for the SNP recently, and I sort of get the fit, you know, the same way you and I talk about the Conservatives here, that it just feels like the end times. I'm getting a similar vibe from the SNP. It will never be quite as cataclysmic.
I mean, to be fair, though, they're still at 30 something points in the polls.
Sure.
Their baseline seems to be a lot higher than the Tories.
I agree with that. But I also think they're not winning all 50 seats at the next session.
No, and the interesting thing about Scotland is that an awful lot more seats in Scotland are marginal. So you could have the two parties having roughly equal vote shares, but those seats tipping and tipping and tipping, because that's the way that the cookie crumbles in those individual constituencies.
Right. I also don't think if there was a Scottish election tomorrow, they would win a majority.
Well, very few, to be fair. The Scottish Parliament was not set up to be a majoritarian parliament.
Indeed.
So it's actually quite unusual that they did win a majority.
But
whether
they
could win a governing minority vote is in question now, I think. And I believe that Anas Sawar has just laid down. So there was originally laid down a vote of confidence in Hamza Yousif alone by the Conservatives in Scotland, Douglas Ross. But now there's a motion laid down of no confidence in the whole Scottish government, which could tip us into a Scottish election if that passes.
That would be fascinating.
Hamza Yousif's vote is currently 63-64, with the vote that would make the difference is Ash Regan, who ran against him in the leadership, defected to Alba, and about whom he then said she was no great loss.
Yes, and but he's now having, I heard about this, he's now having to do a bit of negotiating with her, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like, she's laid down her terms, and whether he will accept them or not, that remains to be seen.
Yes, interesting. We have one other major story this week, which is that the Labour Party have committed to renationalising the rail within 5 years if they win the election.
Yes,
Now, you were
we.
cheering this to the rafters. I have to be honest, I can sort of be convinced either way. I booked a train ticket the other day and I thought, oh, let me have a look if I can get an open return. Let's see how much difference it makes, if it makes my life easier. It was over 300 quid.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely crazy. And if we are trying to do modal shift from car to train or car to public transport, then we cannot have people paying 300 quid for a basic journey. If you drove that, it would cost you what, 20 quid in petrol?
Something like that, yeah, half a tank.
Absolutely
Half a tank, so
crazy.
50 quid. I think this is a popular policy, right? I think people will
Holds
like this.
exceptionally well.
I think it really does. That doesn't mean it's necessarily right, but it's undoubtedly popular. It's interesting to say, actually, that nationalisation doesn't actually appear in the, because it ha given the connotations of it, sometimes Labour didn't actually use that word, but that is what we're talking about.
Yeah, essentially, it's taking so as the rail franchises expire,
Yeah, as their
so
contracts.
they contracts would be taken back into public ownership. So what they're not going to do is pay people a bunch of money for these failing contracts, which is why it's more complicated to do this with things like the water companies, for example.
Yes.
The upsides are that you would, instead of having lots and lots of different train companies negotiating with each other about exactly which other company's fault it was that anything went wrong, you have one unified body. The part of the Labour plan is a guaranteed fare is fair.
Yes, I want to come on to
So
that. A best called it a best price ticket guarantee.
your £300, if there was a better deal available, you would just be offered that better deal.
Yeah, because this thing, when I was looking at it, there was there's things that, so it was trying to split my journey to save me a few quid.
Yeah.
But it wasn't immediately apparent that that's what
No,
was
and you
happening.
have to trawl all over the websites to try and make that happen.
Yes. And I wanted to direct. I was happy to pay
Yeah.
more to just sit on the train. It is, look, it is undoubtedly a mess, our train system.
And the
That is
interesting
undoubtedly.
thing, when this was first done in the 90s, because this wasn't a Thatcherite privatisation, this happened under Major. Even then, people were saying, this is not the way you should do this. This is mental.
Yeah, because I, as you can imagine, I can buy the argument that we should have multiple train companies, and therefore they compete to, in the same way airlines compete to offer you the best value, because it's a competitive space. You could have that with trains, but that isn't what happens with trains either, because certain trains run the route to certain areas, right? So it's
Yeah,
not
because
like,
you can't have a whole load of train companies running on the same track.
right. So it's not even like you get that kind of competition.
No, you don't get competition. The competition is supposed to be happening when they compete for the franchises, but that very rarely actually happens. There is very little investment going in from train companies into stock. The Network Rail, which runs the actual rail, is completely separate.
Yes.
It's all just a complete mess, and bringing it all into one space would make things better. Now, I'm not sure that the one person it wouldn't make things better for is Louise Hay, who ultimately would be responsible every time there is a problem on the railways.
I was going to ask you about her. What do you make of her? She's
Oh, I
obviously,
love Louise.
yeah,
She's fabulous.
I thought you might like her.
I mean,
She's,
look at her hair.
yes, I've always been somewhat impressed by her, I have to say, even if I
She's
don't agree with her.
she's
Quite
a good
punchy.
performer. She's punchy. She knows her stuff. She's clearly, they've done the homework on this. They've really thought it through. Yeah, all of this, Labour doesn't have a plan. Labour doesn't have a plan. This is a plan. This is a detailed plan that they are putting forward to the public.
Yes, it's the start of some substantive policy. I feel like I'm being too generous. I want to find a way to unpick this, but on the face of it, I can't. The proof of the pudding of this will be in the eating, as they say. And your point about Louise Hay is well made because, we've had various Conservative transport secretaries be able to bounce problems off to the company and, do performative bringing them in to give them a bollocking and all that kind of stuff. We've had all that kind of thing, haven't we? Whereas this will fall squarely on Louise Hay's desk. And so she will, in the way that, for example, when stuff goes wrong in the health service, it eventually everyone just homes in on the health secretary. A nationalised train system will inevitably put pressure on the transport secretary, and it really matters to people. Like, I always think of transport, health, and education, particularly as the sort of very tangible bits of politics.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I mean, let's face it, whoever Mark Harper gets questions about this anyway,
Of course.
what he doesn't have is the ability to pull any levers.
No,
So
and he.
maybe the difference between getting the question and being able to pull the levers will be more significant.
Yeah, Mark Harper said these plans were unfunded. Maybe.
I mean, the point is that they're taking them back in at when the franchise ends.
Right, it's
I
not.
mean, it's basically it's just a Tory reflex now. Your plans are unfunded. Your
Yeah,
plans are
it does
unfunded.
feel a
Your
bit
plans are
like
unfunded.
that. I mean, we'll have we, the you know the numbers will play out, but it does seem a bit of a reflex reaction. Anyway, perhaps we'll see a very exciting return to British Rail livery and all that kind of thing.
Well, that would be
I'll
interesting, whether they brand them all as one thing.
I think if you're gonna do it, you might as well do it, right?
I would have thought so. Just this is the age of the train.
Oh my God.
This is
Right, no, we're
age of the train.
stop. We're going to the local elections.
This is the age of local elections.
It is the age of local elections. May the 2nd, we've got mayoral elections in various places. We've got local council elections in various places. You and I were chatting about this, and I said, I'm not really sure what I have to say that's interesting because it just seems like a Tory wipeout to me. For me, the most interesting things are a couple of the mayoral elections, which feel like a bellwether. I said Andy Street, you said Ben Houchin, and I think they're the two we're going to be looking at, aren't they?
Yeah, I think there are some local councils worth looking at, just in terms of what might happen in the general. So Bristol in particular, where the Greens are hoping to pick up a seat, see what happens there, see if the Greens move forward in their council
Yeah, Bristol, Brighton.
representation.
Has Brighton got local elections? Those are the kind of areas the Greens care about.
I don't know about Brighton, but there is a police and crime commissioner election happening in Sussex. So that's,
Right, yeah.
I mean, I don't think Labour will take that.
Andy Street, I noticed, has not used a single piece of Tory branding. And this is something I wanted to bring up with you, just as a little aside, not to do with the local elections, but I opened my letterbox the other day to find a couple of political leaflets in there. For a good 30 seconds, I was convinced I'd received a leaflet from the Labour Party. It was red, it had all sort of that kind of branding. It was from the co local Conservative candidate. I mean, listen, I've done leaflet deliveries for the Lib Dems. I know the trick, but
I mean,
it
bar
made me
charts,
giggle.
man, bar
Made
charts.
me giggle. So yeah, Andy Street has sort of abandoned the Conservative branding, which is interesting. And look, he's always slightly paid on his independence, hasn't he, and his business background. But
Yeah, he's always
this
been Andy Street John Lewis Party rather than Andy Street Conservative Party.
being a bit of that, yeah. But it's a very tight race from the numbers I've seen.
Which is interesting given the state of Birmingham City Council, who's getting blamed for that is interesting. Because I mean, yeah, there are arguments on both sides, but certainly 40% of local authority cuts under austerity didn't help matters. I think
Meanwhile, it's a Labour-dominated council. Anyway, we don't need to debate on
What
behalf of the people.
I mean, I think the Tories are hoping to hang on to Andy Street and are thinking
Yes.
they're going to hang on to Ben Houchen. I mean, Ben Houchen won like 75% of the vote last
Hugely popular,
time.
massive. But again, it's
That it's head
interesting.
neck and neck now is interesting.
And
I mean,
Teesside,
even
isn't
if
it?
Labour don't manage to push it over the edge, that's still a massive advance.
Indeed, but he does, like Andy Street, has a bit of personal popularity.
Yes.
Sorry, I said Teesside. Tees Valley is the
Tees
technical
Valley,
name.
yeah. Which is Teesside
Yeah.
essentially. Land of the Palmo.
He was hugely popular. Was a bit of a shock when he first got elected, as I recall.
Yeah, oh yeah. I remember I can't even remember the name of his opponent now, his Labour opponent, but I remember me and John Elledge trying to make her a meme on Twitter for quite some time.
Oh dear, you too. We'll have to get John back on the show at some point. We've got those two. The general theme, of course, is I assume when we start seeing these results come in, we're going to see a very devastating minus number in the blue corner. We're going to lose a lot of Conservative councillors. I can't see any other alternative.
I mean, I think that's absolutely true. I don't think it's going to be quite as big, possibly, as people expect, because
Oh,
there's been
stop
a lot
spinning.
of no. Lewis Baston had some very interesting numbers on this. There's been a lot of sort of inter elections happening in the interregnum, which mean that it's not quite as clear cut. Because obviously, the last time these elections, Labour was still very much at the foothills of their recovery. Tories were, I think, in the middle of the vaccine bounce, so the Tories did really well last time. They are going to go backwards. I'm not denying that at all. I'm not trying to spin this. I'm just saying that it's not going to be quite as massive. And then again, there will be interesting places to look at in the northwest, places like Pendle, places like Rotherham, where a lot of Labour councillors have stepped down because of the issues over Israel Gaza, and what happens in those seats.
Yeah, that will be an interesting side issue. I sort of have always stuck with my view that Rishi Sunak, we should be heading into a general election next week. I think he should have done it all in one go. Although probably if they'd done that, it would have been a demolition job because lots of people would have got out for both types of vote.
Yeah, I think the argument against doing that is that councillors don't want to be seeing those high turn anti-Tory turnouts.
Which I think would have happened. I guess also the hope for Rishi Sunak is he gets a kicking on Thursday and people have got it out of their system.
Fingers crossed,
For
is
him.
all Rishi Sunak can say.
Yes.
But I just don't see it. Yeah. Of course, the spin from Tory HQ will be, we always lose local elections when we're in government, blah, blah, blah.
Midterm,
They
yeah.
can't quite say midterm, but you know what I mean.
14 years in.
But they, well, even 14 years in and in an election year,
Yeah.
you can see things do turn around very quickly. Look at 2017 when Labour was absolutely decimated in the locals and then went on to do considerably better
Yep.
in the general election than expected. So the problem, and I think there's a line in John Cleese's film, it's not the despair that kills you, it's the hope.
Indeed. I just can't see any other outcome. I think your point about there's some certain council areas we're going to have to look for is correct. Obviously, the other thing that will be very interesting is what kind of foothold reform can get
Yes.
and where.
I mean, I think the problem reform has, and you can see this in the people they put forward for Parliament, never mind the ones they put forward for local government. They just don't have the ranks and file of talent. They have an awful lot of very passionate people who care a great deal about national issues. What they're not are the kinds of people generally, I mean, I'm sure they have some. Who make great local councillors. who will do the local surgery. This has often been the issue. It was the issue with UKIP.
Yes.
They just didn't do that local work.
No, I mean, I'm not comparing reform to the BNP, but I do remember there was that shot. It was when I was at university, it was a good 15 years ago. Can't remember what year the elections were, but I remember being a saddo at university, listening to the local election results coming on a radio and hearing BNP councillors get elected.
Yeah.
And again, didn't hold on.
That was in Tower Hamlets. I
And I
remember
think it
it
was in the
very,
north of
very
England.
clearly.
There was some in the north of England as well, weren't
The
there?
well, the first one was in Tower Hamlets in the early 90s, and then there were more
I wasn't in
later
university in
on.
the mid-90s, goodness me.
Shut up. Some of us were in university in 95.
Right, be quiet. I was there 20 years later, shut up.
20 years later from 95. That's 2015. That's when we met. That's a lie.
2006. Oh, 10 years. 2006, I was in university. Anyway, my point is sometimes fringe parties, and again, I'm really not comparing reform to the BNP. I don't want to do that.
No.
But smaller fringe parties sometimes get their council foothold. You think, oh my goodness, this is the moment. And then it doesn't bear out. That's my only point.
And the thing about being a local councillor is you either, and let's be honest, have to be one of the big three parties, in which case you are covered by your enough of your colleagues, or you have to be incredibly diligent. Now there's a huge overlap between those two things. I'm not in any way saying that there isn't. Most local
Yeah.
councillors of the main three parties are also incredibly diligent. But the ones who don't have the backing of a big ticket party, who will have a decent group within the council, have to really make themselves visible and responsive to their local ward.
Of course, the other party I'm going to be watching, no surprises, the Lib Dems, because for the Lib Dems, local councils are hugely, hugely, hugely important. They're hugely important in terms of resources. They're hugely important in terms of getting contact with voters. Sometimes people they have the problem, and I know this from personal experience, where people say, "Oh yeah, I'll vote for you for the council, but not for the general election,"
Yeah.
whatever. But it's hugely important, and if the Lib Dems can start getting on councils in that quote unquote blue wall, wherever, where those seats are
Yeah.
held, and
Sussex, Suffolk,
right, all
not
of
Suffolk, Sussex, Hampshire,
exactly
Berkshire.
all of those kind of areas, that's going to really scare the Conservatives.
Absolutely. If they can get into Surrey Heath.
Will very much bother Jeremy Hunt.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's all of that going on. Born and bred Londoners. So we're going to
Yes.
have to talk. So the only vote you and I have is London Mayor this on Thursday.
Plus London Assembly, plus Charlotte.
Absolutely, I should know that because I stood for the London Assembly. But yes, you're right.
Did you? I
London's,
didn't know that.
the London. So yes, London Assembly. I kind of think of that as part of the same vote. But yes, you're casting your vote for that as well. We should note that the London mayoral election system has changed. It's now fast past the post. So I can no longer cast my token vote for Count Binface,
Sad, sad,
and then
sad.
a proper candidate. Unfortunately, it's all been rather underwhelming, this London mayoral campaign, hasn't it?
Well, basically, the Tories messed it up from the get-go.
Yes, we've
They
discussed this
had
before.
that candidate they wanted, whose name
Paul Scully.
escapes me. No, not Paul Scully. They kept Paul
Oh,
Scully off the
yes, they
list
kicked Paul Scully
because
out.
they the he would have beaten the candidate, or like potentially beaten the candidate
Paul
who they
Scully is the one
wanted.
that should have got it, yeah.
So they stacked the list by having two useless candidates and the guy they wanted. And then the guy they wanted had to step down after being accused of various sexual
Yes.
misconduct.
Yes, it was a bit of a mess, wasn't it?
And so they ended up with Susan Hall, who was one of the people that they were supposed to, one of the useless ones, so you vote for the guy they want.
And has not showered
Covered
herself.
herself in glory.
Yeah, not covered herself in glory. Showered herself in glory, yeah. No, indeed not. And Sadiq Khan's on a rather underwhelming campaign. I find it quite depressing, really, because I think Susan Hall is an appalling candidate. I don't think she'd be a very good mayor. I don't think Sadiq Khan is a very good mayor. And I don't think the Lib Dems can win.
I think Sadiq's all right. I think he's a very different... Well, yeah, but no, that's not what I mean. I think Sadiq's been really different from what's come before in that he's been far less showy. He's not been...
He's been very showy. That's been the whole thing.
No, I don't think that's true at all.
Jetting up here and there.
Yeah, his job is to be ambassador for London. What he hasn't done is name any infrastructure after himself. We haven't got Sadiq cycles or, Khan cabs. There hasn't been a big
Hasn't given
thing.
Us the Khan cable car.
No Khan cable car. So in many ways, that's quite a big departure from the way that both Ken and Boris did it. But what he's been is a fairly competent administrator, and I quite like that.
What I don't like about Sadiq Khan is I think he's... I don't agree with that, because I think he has tried to do the showy things. I can't think of much in London that's got better under his leadership. And I think he's often very keen to blame other people, i.e. central government, for problems in London.
I mean, I think some of that's true and some of it's not true. The problems with the Tube are down to, I mean, and it's in a letter from Grant Shapps. We know that the underfunding of the Tube was a deliberate decision by Grant Shapps. The Superloop buses are brilliant. That's a really good innovation. I hope that we've built more council housing than we have in 40 odd years, I think. And he's promising a lot more. I hope he sticks to that. I will be keeping his feet to the fire on that, as I'm sure will Deputy Mayor of Housing Tom Copley.
I'll tell you one thing I will be generous to him on, because you've just mentioned Tom Copley. I think he's probably hired some quite competent people around him.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love Tom. I think Tom's brilliant. And he is single-minded. He's really focused on council housing. And I think that's a good thing.
I'm very uninspired by this race. I'm very, I think Sadiq Khan will win pretty comfortably in the end.
I think he'll win. I think it'll be less comfortable than people think. The outer boroughs are cross about you, Les.
Yeah.
They'll get over that by the next election, but that's it. We're at that pivot point now. So I think it will be. I think people will go, ooh. But I think he will be returned to City Hall.
Yeah, I would be utterly amazed if that didn't happen. We should say, as we're recording this, there is a bit of controversy surrounding Sadiq Khan. He has apologised to the chief rabbi, Sir Ephraim Mervis, for comments he made when speaking to Mehdi Hassan, basically implying that the chief rabbi reacted to Sadiq Khan's call for a ceasefire more strongly because he was motivated by Islamophobia. As the Jewish News is reporting that he has apologised for that. This is a mess, but I'm going to try and start a bit generous and then be angry. So I think Sadiq Khan, for most of the Corbyn years, for a lot of the other shoots of anti-Semitism, has done really well. I think he legitimately gets it. I think he legitimately has concerns about anti-Semitism, and I think he's largely been on the right side, as in against anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And I think that is a sincere thing. And I have given him credit for that, and I'm happy to do so. This is a mess. This was a terrible comment. He basically, you can find the comments online, but he's basically saying Andy Burnham didn't get as much stick for calling for a ceasefire as he did because Sadiq Khan is Muslim, has a Muslim name. I don't think that's true. And I think to imply that the chief rabbi is Islamophobic is an appalling and inaccurate thing to do. And It looks like Sadiq Khan's come to the same conclusion and has apologised. But this is a mess.
Yeah, it's a dumb thing to say. I think part of the problem is that when British politicians appear on US programmes, they tend to lean into US narratives. And I think, I mean, I'm not in any way, by the way, making an excuse. This is a stupid, appalling thing to say. He probably got wound up by his host.
Mehdi Hasan wound someone up.
Who'd have thunk? And ended up in a very, very silly place. I'm glad that he's immediately apologised, quite rightly, as he should. We need to be so conscious, and I have been spending the last 6 months being so conscious of not pitting particularly British Muslim communities and Jewish communities against each other,
sure,
based on a war thousands of miles away.
Sure.
There are, you know, and...
Let's not debate that. I want to drill down into Sadiq Khan, because my guess is, for various reasons, this will blow over because he's reacted quickly and apologised.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And also, I'll be blunt, there ain't enough people that are going to be bothered about it either.
No, and I think it is also worth recognising, how do I put this? Sadiq Khan has been a victim of Islamophobia his whole life.
Indeed.
Those who are victims of a type of racism their whole life are often overly sensitive to expectation of it. And you can see it where it doesn't exist. And I think that may be part of what happened in the moment here. But again, that's not to excuse, it's to understand.
So we've had this. It comes obviously in a week where there's been a lot of focus on the Metropolitan Police for them handling those protests, which also comes back to Sadiq Khan. I have to say, I think the Metropolitan Police handling of those protests has been appalling. And I think it was appalling from the start, and they set a line. Let me be unequivocal. I do not think those protests should be banned. You have a right to protest in this country. I do think certain phrases and certain violent language and certain violent actions should result in police action. And I think the Met's response has been appalling. And that ultimately comes back to both James Cleverly, the Home Secretary, and Sadiq Khan. So this, I bring it up only because it is in part of a week where he's under fire for this kind of issue.
The Met are, there is...
But he's ultimately responsible for the Met.
Yeah, but there's always this blurred line between political responsibility and operational responsibility.
Absolutely.
And that is down to the...
It is one of the reasons why the Met is such a basket case.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I mean, it was a dumb mistake. I'm glad he's...
We should wrap this up. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. We will return to analyse all the results for our next episode. I'm sure there'll always be a few standout interesting things, as we say. So we'll see you then. Emma, where can people keep up with you in the interim?
You can read my newsletter, Hard Thinking on the Soft Left, and I am on Twitter at @EmmaBurnell_.
I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across social media. Please head over to theaddition.net to read all my blogs on tech and media and sign up to the newsletter there. I would really appreciate that. The best thing you could do, of course, to highlight this and get all the stuff from us is head over to patreon.com/House of Comments podcast, because you support both this show and get our newsletters added to the paid version of our newsletters. So we would really appreciate that. That's patreon.com/House of Comments podcast. And we'll see you next week for some election results.